Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, today, my friends, is a very special episode because I have a special guest. She is someone that I have known for well over 16, 17 years. She is someone that I have the pleasure of seeing every day of my life. She's the mother of my children. She is my wife, Serena Denniston. Welcome, wife.
Hi.
All right. So, so glad to have you, honey. I'd love for you just to tell people about you and your journey a little bit. So go ahead.
Okay. I'm super excited to be here with you today. And a little bit about myself. Born and raised in Seattle, Washington. And just grew up loving sports and loving music and arts and people. And so that's pretty much been my whole life. Pretty has been centered around loving people, loving sports, loving music, and just having some really great adventures. And of course, a lot of those adventures have been with you. So it's been exciting growing our family and taking all the journeys and the risk and the adventures that we've been on together has been pretty fantastic. I have amazing parents. They have been married for, it will be 44 years next year. And so they have set a wonderful example for me as a woman to follow a good godly example of a wonderful relationship. And I believe that's been a big influence on us as well as your parents too. And yeah, we just love our girls and watching them grow up, and they're both in such different seasons of life, and it's just been great being your wife and being the mother of our children, and again, just exploring all these different adventures and journeys together. So, yeah.
Well, and you've had your own journeys, right? You know, that have been separate from some of the things that I've been doing. So I think that'd be fun to talk about. But I think let's give people a little background. I've had in the introduction, which, by the way, she is the lovely voice behind this year's introduction. She put together the whole musical arrangement, which was awesome. So that is my wife. You've been hearing all of this year. If the voice might sound a little familiar to you, I would love to talk for you to talk about a little bit. How did we meet and what is our story?
Of course you would ask that so I can embarrass myself again, which I don't mind. We met on the track team at Seattle Pacific University in 2000. It was the fall of 2000. It would have been my senior year and your sophomore year, but because you were just new on the team, we called you a freshman and teased you with all the rest of the actual freshmen. And immediately when we met, I just knew there was something different about you. And I didn't know exactly like if I was developing feelings or what, because I just love people. But then as time went on, I was like, no, yeah, this is definitely something else. And I remember one day when we were all coming back from one of our long runs that we had, and pretty much it was almost the whole team, and we were all standing at an intersection getting ready to do the crosswalk to go back over on the other side where our gym was and everything. And I don't know what I was thinking. I wasn't thinking. I turned around and I looked at you and I said, "You have the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen." And I think you were so shocked. It was as if you could hear like a needle drop outside and the wind was blowing, and like all of our teammates were just like looking going, "What is going on?" And I just turned around, and I'm African American, but I'm positively sure I turned red. I was so embarrassed. Didn't even realize it just like fell out of my mouth. And after that, I was in the locker room with my teammates, and they did not stop teasing me. They teased me relentlessly for so long, but you were so chill about it. Like, you didn't get weird about it or treat me weird or treat me different. As a matter of fact, you were so sweet and so kind. And that is where I believe the basis of our friendship began to develop and grow. So, yeah.
I think what was so neat was we had a foundation of friendship before we ever got into relationship. As a matter of fact, you and I were training partners. So I walk on to the team. I did high school and track. So I was a 400-meter runner. You, in college, you were a scholarship athlete. I often say you're the jock. You know, I'm just a regular guy. And at SPU, the Seattle Pacific University, the gender ratio was like 3-1 or 4 girls to 1 guy or something like that. Yeah. And so I think it's Title IX or Title 11. I can't remember. There's something that says that the scholarship ratio has to be the same as the gender ratio. And so you were blessed with getting a track scholarship, like full ride pretty much, to the university. And that meant that as a guy, I could walk onto the team. And so I walk onto the track team because there's no scholarship guy athletes for the track team. That was all basketball and soccer. And we ended up being training partners. And so I was pushing you. You were pushing me. And it was a wonderful thing we had. I would go over to your place every so often for dinner. And we just laughed together. And I think one of the first moments I think too was we went to this, you came over to my place or something and said, hey, let's go do something. I don't remember exactly what happened, but we end up going to a beach that we call our beach, which overlooks the sound, the Puget Sound in Seattle, you know, twinkling lights, the water lapping up on the shore. And we were sitting on a log and we shared some incredible heart-to-heart moments. And it's almost like, I think of it as almost like a click that's like, this is kind of the way things are supposed to be. And you shared things with me emotionally. I shared things with you emotionally, like how my grandfather had committed suicide, something that at that point I hadn't shared with anybody really outside of immediate family. And I think that friendship and emotional bond like we had that night really set the stage for us getting married later. So I'd love to hear kind of what your thought was on that moment and then what happened afterwards. So fill everyone on what happened like the next year or two after that moment on the log.
Oh boy. I love it because these are all the wonderful, embarrassing stories about myself that led to us being married today for almost 16 years. So I would say that evening, very vivid in my memory, was really special because it wasn't romantic at all. You know, it was just two people sitting down and being vulnerable with one another and sharing things. And it was a different kind of intimacy, I believe, that was built that evening between the two of us. And I remember going back, we drove back to campus and I dropped you off at your dorm and then I went back to my apartment. And I remember walking in and my roommate was like, hey, how did it go? Like, where'd you guys end up going to do? And I told her, I was like, oh, we just went to this really cool beach, you know, in Magnolia, and we sat down and we just talked. And she, you know, was like, oh, well, did like anything, of course, like, did you hold hands or anything like that? And I just told her, I was like, no, I was like, not at all. I was like, it was really, really cool. And she said to me, she goes, you really like him, don't you? And I was like, I think so, but I'm not sure how to handle that because I had been through some really bad relationships, bad choices of guys that I had been through. And I knew there was something different about you, but I knew I needed to get myself on a good, positive track. I needed to heal from a lot of the things from my past. And I did not want to bring you into that stuff if I didn't feel like I was healed, because I didn't want to hurt you, because you were just, there was just something different about you. You were so special and you were genuine, you know, and you weren't weird or slimy or like, you know, just, you weren't awkward. It was just, it felt so natural being around you. And that freaked me out. And so, like, we continued to train. And I remember that Christmas break we had, or they call it winter break, Christmas break, you stayed at your aunt and uncle's, and I went home, back home, and we were maybe only 10, 15 minutes away from one another. So we decided, okay, let's continue training through our break. By that time, I knew that I really liked you, and it freaked me out, and I was scared, and I was like, I'm not ready. This is not, I can't. So we got to the track, and we were training, and we got done, and I was sitting on the turf, and you were sitting on I think it was like one of the benches that they would use for like football teams, because we trained in a stadium. And I looked at you and I said, so I just need to let you know something. And you were like, what? And I was like, yeah, so this is only just a friendship, and that's as far as it's going to be, because I don't really like you like that. And then I turned around and ran off up the stadium stairs. And as I was running up the stadium stairs away from you, I was like, what did I just do? And I turn around and you're just sitting there on that football bench going, what just happened? Like, what in the world? And then from then on, we got back to school and I tried to avoid you like the plague, because I knew I liked you, but I didn't want to hurt you. So I was like, let me try to avoid him as much as I can, which really didn't work because you were my training partner. And so I would try to get to the track like early and warm up before you would get there, but you would always be there, and you were always so sweet, and you never, like, you never acted weird or indifferent or like, again, like awkward, or like, or you never like said to me or confronted me and said, what is going on? Like, why did you say all that stuff to me? You were just like so chill. And I remember one time I had just had a really rough day. I had found some news out about a friend of mine that was really sad. And I remember going back to my apartment, and the door, I heard the door, and my roommate answered it. And she was like, Serena, somebody's here to see you. And I was like, okay. So I come out and you're standing right there. And I'm just going, oh. And it wasn't like a, oh, like, what is he doing here? It was just like it was like comforting to see your face. And you were like, yeah, I just wanted to come by. I felt like maybe you just needed to, I don't know, talk about something. Maybe you just didn't have a good day. How's it going? And it was just like, I didn't say it out loud, but in my mind, I was like, how in the world did he know that I had a terrible day? And so it was just awesome. You came and you hung out with me and my roommate. And I remember that dinner we made. I made steak, and we had steak and macaroni and broccoli for dinner that night. And we chowed down. And from there, it was just it was really a wonderful rest of the year. Again, just the friendship. We just continued developing that friendship. And I didn't say anything because, again, I just wasn't ready. And then I remember that summer, you know, let me backtrack. You were an amazing training partner, because you did. You pushed me. And each year, I had not gone to nationals in my own event. I had gone to nationals in the 4x400 meter relay freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, and senior year. I kind of was just like, it seems like it's going to repeat itself. So I was just okay with that. But you just kept pushing me, and you were so encouraging, and you would say little things like, come on, girl, you can do this. Like, let's go. You can drop another second in this interval. Okay, come on, let's go. Let's do this. And it was just, it was so cool, you know, how you encouraged me. And I remember just feeling stronger and stronger as time went on. And it was, I think, we had three meets left to qualify for nationals in our own events. And I was an open 400 meter runner as well. And we were at Washington State University, and it was a beautiful day. And I ran really well in warm weather, and I was a sprinter. So that's really good for warm weather. And I remember getting in those blocks, and I remember just busting out of those blocks, and I just felt good the whole way around. And I crossed the finish line, and all my teammates are like screaming, and the coaches are screaming, and they're just like all excited. And I'm going like, what? I mean, because I felt like I had a good race. I didn't realize that I had actually qualified for nationals that day. And I remember getting back. You weren't at that track meet. And I remember seeing you, though, that after that weekend had passed, because the track meet was Saturday. And I remember seeing you Monday. And I remember, I swear I must have jumped and given you the biggest hug. And I was like, you'll never guess what happened. And you were so excited for me. And you just celebrated me. And you're like, I bet you can drop your time even more. I swear that's what you said to me, you know. And it was just so cool. And I made it, you know. And of course, I went in the 4x400 meter relay as well, too. But I made it in my own event, you know, and that was huge. And I give a lot of the credit to you, honey, because, you know, you were just so encouraging. And you didn't, like, for you, you came on because you wanted to have fun. You weren't trying to be out there and be, like, the next Usain Bolt or the next, like, Michael Johnson. You just had fun. And I really believe that. That was what made me relax a little bit more, too, because I was always so competitive with myself all the time. I still am. and it was just, it was a great year. And so then we, summer came, and naturally we kind of just parted ways, didn't really see each other. And then that fall, I had one last class to take. I was getting out of that class, walking, and I ran into you. And so that's the... where we can leave it there, and now you can continue.
Well, I want to fast forward a little bit in time. So just to kind of summarize, we ended up starting to date 6-7 months later, got married a year after that, and started our family. And we ended up, it took a little while, and there were kind of some anxious moments on your side because you wanted to have a baby and get going.
Don't forget to leave out.
We're gonna leave that out for the sake of time. That might have to be a different day. And now let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Well, my friends, 4 years into this podcasting journey, I have accumulated tons and tons and tons of material from my guests, from books I've written, and everything else. And so I have created a whole system for you that I call the Freedom Formula for Physicians Prosperity Kit. This kit is every single thing that I've ever created. So if you are wanting to get an edge on your finances, if you are wanting to get that financial education all in one place, all in one box, I'm throwing the whole kitchen sink at you. My latest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. My first book, The Freedom Guide, The Freedom Formula for Physicians. I'm going to throw in the audio CDs. I'm going to throw in copies of podcasts. I'm going to throw in a USB drive with tons and tons of material on it. I'm going to throw in workbooks that have other published works that I have had. Anything and everything that I have done is in this system, and it is less than $100. $99.87 will get you 4 years worth of my blood, sweat, and tears to help you move yourself forward. And as a special bonus, I'm going to include more about my land investing journey, what's been going on there, give you an inside scoop as to the latest and greatest and things that you might want to learn as you go along. So with that, my friends, if you are interested in moving forward, go to drfreedompodcast/system. Again, drfreedompodcast.com/system. drfreedompodcast.com/system. And now back to the show. This show is, of course, for physicians. And there has been a huge influence on our lives with both of our daughters. And I've talked several times about our youngest daughter, Evangeline, and her story. But I haven't really talked about Gabby's birth and what happened with that. So I would love for you to talk about kind of the role of doctors in our lives and what happened with our oldest daughter, who's going to high school next year. Oh, my gosh. So why don't you talk a little bit about Gabby's birth and kind of the role of doctors for us?
Doctors, nurses, medical staff, all of you out there, thank you for everything that you do, because of what you do, you save thousands of lives every single day. And for us, with our oldest daughter, really honestly, it was a miracle that happened. I had what's called, and David, I know he has shared about it before in earlier podcast episodes, his side of the story. I had what's called preeclampsia toxemia. I'm not going to jump into all the specifications of what that means, but basically sometimes it's onset while you're pregnant, and then sometimes in a rare occasion it can be post after you're pregnant, and mine for Gabby was postpartum. And so basically what happened was she was born, she was 4 pounds and 9 ounces, and they decided to keep us at the hospital together because they wanted us to bond, and then they wanted to make sure that she got over 5 pounds because she was a little jaundiced as well. And we were getting ready to go home that day, and that was when the preeclampsia toxemia set off. And I remember talking on the phone with my dad, and then that was the last thing I remember. And I woke up and I had bumpers on my bed, which are those things to make sure you don't knock yourself around. And I must have had like 6 or 7 different IVs in my body to come to find out that I had gone into grand mal seizures from the preeclampsia toxemia. It had attacked my body, and then my brain just kind of lost control. And so that was pretty terrifying when you don't have control over your own bodily functions and not knowing what's going on, you know. And so that was a long couple weeks that we went through. And meanwhile, Gabby's growing and healthy and strong and doing well. And we have friends and family that were nonstop around the clock at the hospital for 24 hours for 2 weeks while we battled this. Because the doctors didn't want to tell you, oh, yeah, everything's going to be fine. But they didn't want to tell you, oh, everything's going to go downhill. So it was kind of like this teetering balancing act that we were trying to play for 2 weeks and stay strong, believing that we were going to go home and that I was going to be completely healed and we were going to be fine. So, yeah.
And I think that was a huge change for us, having a daughter, then on top of that, some of those health issues that happen. And I remember one particular moment where you had seizures in those 2 weeks, I think 3 or 4 times. I can't remember exactly, but I'm a pretty stoic guy. And there was one time where I was holding Gabby, you know, little tiny baby, less than 5 pounds, and you started seizing. And like, I lost it. Like, I had to hand over the baby to a nurse, and like, I was crying. Like, it was like that bad for me. It's like thoughts of, am I going to lose my wife? You know? And thank goodness, obviously, we made it and we're here. And I'm just so grateful to the physician community and the nurses and all of that, that came out okay. And during this whole time, we were in the Seattle area. You were born and raised in Seattle. And we went to school, to college at Seattle Pacific University. You were always close to home. And during the time period between Gabby's birth and the first few years of her life, we lost my grandmother. You lost your great grandmother, and the great aunt. We bought our first house. You know, we were doing all these things. We ended up getting blessed with an inheritance from my great aunt, who I've talked about in a long time ago. It's probably been 3 years since I talked about Aunt Margaret, where she didn't have any kids, and so there was just my small immediate family, my dad, my aunt, 2 cousins, and myself, that we all received an inheritance. So we were completely debt-free. We didn't have a mortgage. We had a mortgage for a small time period, then we paid it off after Aunt Margaret passed away. And we didn't have any car loans. We were, I had my job, and I wasn't making a whole lot of money. I was making like $50,000-$60,000, which probably today would be like $70,000-$80,000 or something. This was in 2005.
Yeah, and I had stopped working.
And you were working, you were teaching previously, before Gabby was born, music. And the years kind of went on here, 2006, 2007. My boss goes through a divorce, which was messy, and I was kind of running the show. And we had assets, and I was 27 years old. Mm-hmm. You were 24, of course, because you're younger than I am.
Whatever,
She's 2 years older, and she still looks like she's 25. Everyone says black don't crack, you know. So, I ended up being very unhappy with where I was at, and I was going through the chartered financial analyst program, working my tail off to try and move further in my career, and came across a whole bunch of opportunities, which I started looking into and talking to people about buying a business. And so I've talked about this in the podcast before, but I think everyone would love to hear from your perspective. Like this time where my boss is going through a divorce, I'm not happy with what's happening at work. He won't make me a partner, which is what I had wanted. I was willing to buy into the partnership. And I start looking at different places across the country. Tell us about that time period, if you can remember.
Yeah. Well, I remember you coming to me and telling me, honey, I really feel like we're supposed to own a business. I feel like that's the direction that God's taking us in. And I was, of course, number one cheerleader, like, let's go throw the pom-poms up in the air, do splits, probably get stuck, go to the medics, but that's okay. So my initial thinking was like, oh yeah, it's totally going to be great. God's going to open up a door. We'll probably end up moving, you know, somewhere in another suburb around this Seattle area, but it's going to be all good. But then that is not what ended up happening. As you started to look, it was like we had prayed together and come up with criteria that we were looking for, and everything West Coast just didn't fit that, you know? And so when the initial thought came to me, like, I think he might be trying to say we're going to be moving, I was not okay with that because I had, you know, been born and raised in Seattle. All my family, all my friends, everybody was there. And I had never moved. I had been, like, when you talk about, like, faithful and committed and, like, loyal, that's all I ever knew. Like, I grew up at that moment. We were in only the second church I had ever been in my whole entire life. And you build that community, you build that family, and you're rooted deep. And so I was just like not okay with that. And I really honestly had to pray, and I really had to ask God to soften my heart so that I would not deter whatever it was the next step that we wanted to take and that I felt like you as a leader of our home were guiding us in. And so So that was kind of like, I would say, what I really went through. And then, of course, the realization, here we are now, you know, over 10 years in Minnesota. And it's come with its challenges, but I'm sure you'll want to talk about that in a little bit. But that's kind of how my thought was, you know, when you said, hey, I think we might be moving, might be thinking about something out of the state. I had to get my own peace, and I couldn't put the stress and pressure on you to give me that peace. I was like, nope, I got to get it myself. So, yeah.
So what about when I told you, I think Minnesota, of all places in the country, this is it. This is the opportunity. What about that?
I remember you said that and I was like, Minnesota? Like Minnehuda? Like, I don't even, what? I'm sorry. I didn't know there was even like states in the middle of our country because I had never known anyone or heard of anybody that lived in the Midwest, and I thought it was just like a barren wasteland with people that ride sleds and get to places they need to get to. And so I just honestly, the first initial thing that I prayed about, and I just said, okay, if we're going to be moving, God, I need to know where our church family is going to be. That's what I need to know, because I knew that was going to be the first place that I was going to feel at home would have been like within the church community. And so, and then of course God answered that prayer, and it happened so quickly, and it was just a natural transition. So, but yeah, Minnesota, I didn't even have Minnesota on a list of places to visit, let alone live. And here we are. So yeah.
So we get here to Minnesota. That ends up being the place. Just cutting out time here just for the sake, we don't have 2 weeks to do this podcast.
Right.
We get here to Minnesota. It's August 1st, 2008 when I get here. Two, three weeks later, you and the girls, Gabby, at that time, she was about to turn three.
Yep.
You guys get here, and we end up going to Greece for our 5-year anniversary trip, and the financial crisis happens. And the purchase price originally was supposed to be $3 million for this practice that I just bought.
Right.
And we put down $1 million, of which a huge chunk of that was family loans. Mm-hmm. We had our house in Covington, Washington. We had no debt on it before. We levered up. We took out a mortgage in order to take money out to pay for the acquisition. We had like 200, 300 grand in IRAs and 401ks and non-qualified accounts. We liquidated all of that mm-hmm. to buy the business. Mm-hmm. And so we went from no debt and pretty much no pressure mm-hmm. to like a ton of pressure mm-hmm. and the economy collapsed. Mm-hmm. And in my way of freaking out, I was kind of freaking out. And there were a lot of really tense moments. Mm-hmm. I remember times that you were just like crying and depressed, you know, mm-hmm. Never having lived away from Seattle before. And there were a few moments where we, for the first time ever, we kind of argued and our voices like raised. Yeah. Like that's not normally something that happens with us. Right. And that first year was hard. So I'm sure everyone wants to know from your perspective, what was that like for you, that first year or two, that huge change that we had? What was happening for you at that time?
I would say probably the first thing that was happening for me is I was just very concerned because with that market crash and the financial crisis happening right when we were in the middle of celebrating our fifth year of marriage in a beautiful country, and that happening and just seeing how that affected you made me really concerned. Because, you know, you really are the rock of our family. And when I looked at you and I was like, oh my gosh, like my husband's like really shaken. And then that made me concerned. And then being here in another state, you know, we're still freshly here, still getting to know people, you know, and I did not want to put any more pressure on you by dropping how I was feeling emotionally on you. And because I didn't have my parents here, you know, and my faith at that time was really shaken. So I was not, I would say I was not really talking with God as much as I needed to be at that time, and really praying and getting peace from Him. And so it was very much so an emotional roller coaster. And I don't remember how it happened, but it was either you saying it or me saying it. And then, you know, we decided that we needed to go to counseling just to get some help with the transition, which is an encouragement to you married couples out there. You know, if you're facing trials and challenges, don't give up. Just get some help. Get some help from people that can help you, because there are people that want to, you know. And so David and I made that choice and decision to get some help, because we're like, we're not going to let these outside circumstances dictate our relationship and cause our marriage to fall apart. We're going to work at this, you know, and it was really good just being able to unearth some buried, I would say, emotions and feelings and stuff, being able to air that stuff out in a healthy way, talk about it together, pray about it together, laugh, cry, whatever we needed to do, was just really super healing. And it made those challenges not dissipate because they were still there. But it united us as a stronger force, because we weren't trying to face them alone. We knew, okay, this sucks right now, but as long as we stay together and we stay grounded, we can face this mountain and we can climb it and conquer it. So, yeah.
And so we make it through some really hard times. You know, we didn't our marriage didn't dissolve, and we kept at it. And I'd say for me during that time period, I often call it, you know, the 10 most difficult years of my life, you know, from 2008 through basically, I'd say maybe a year ago, okay. You know. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, it was like was believing that everything would go the right way. You know, when you take this big risk, and you know there's always the possibility it could fall apart. I mentioned it was a $3 million acquisition originally. Part of that was an earnout. Part of that, one third of it was earnout, one third was a note payment, one third was the down payment. Basically what we ended up doing was just erasing the other two. So you and I didn't have to worry about paying 15 grand a month.
Right.
on something that certainly wasn't producing the revenue, which there's a whole bunch of issues behind that that I don't really want to get into in this podcast. We ended up resolving that situation. So it became a $1 million acquisition rather than a $3 million acquisition. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, I owed money to my family, to my my immediate family, mm-hmm. my folks, and some other family members. Mm-hmm. And they were always gracious. They were always kind. But I had and still have to a degree this guilt, you know, of like, man, I screwed this up, right? Like, they invested time and money and believed in me, right? And like, I'm not able to pay them back at the rate we wanted to. So we started out paying them like a couple $100 a month. Right. There was a time period where we weren't paying them anything. And things got better and better over time and was able to pay them more. But to really make big progress on getting them paid off, like, we weren't making a whole lot of progress. And then we go through 6 years ago, the stuff with Evangeline getting born, and you were working at the time, but it really kind of changed your career in a sense, you know, of having to be more at home and having a lot of attention on her, mm-hmm. rather than doing some of the things you were passionate about. So I'd love to hear from your perspective, you know, that financially tight time, and then the transition into me doing this podcast 4 years ago and exploring all these experiments that I've been doing in order to speed up that process. So could you talk about that for a little bit and tell everyone what that period was like, where we have these family loans and we're trying to work through it, and then I start coming up with, hey, how about we do this or this or this, and what that's been like for you?
Yeah. Well, I would say the approach that I would come at it from, and I'm sure Dave has probably shared with you that a lot of what I have done has been centered around ministry and people, and so I'm very strong in my faith. And I know for us, one of the biggest things really was just praying about a lot of the things that we were seeing, you know, and just trusting that, you know, God wasn't going to fail us and that we weren't going to end up, you know, out on the road or out on the street or whatever the phrase is that people use. And just, you know, watching how you, I was so impressed and still am, honey, because of the fact that you don't back down from a challenge. You just figure out a new way to attack it. Like, if one way doesn't work, then you back up, reassess, and you go back in and fight. And if that doesn't work, you back up, reassess, go back in and fight. And even if you get beat up, you're like, well, you know what? My eye is black and blue, but that's okay. I still have the other one and it's open. So I'm going to use that one and I'm going to go back in and fight, you know? And I really honestly believe that that was, like I said, you know, just such a foundational rock that you displayed, you know, being able to carry our family through so many of the things, you know, and yeah, did it change some of the things I was wanting to do at the time? Absolutely. But it didn't change it forever. I mean, you know, we can get into talking about what's happened for me in the past 5 years has been pretty cool. But that's another time. But I would just say that, you know, you've been steadfast through it all. And it's great because you use what's in your hand. And I could talk about a biblical reference about that, Moses and the Israelites and what he had, his staff in his hand crossing the Red Sea. And it was like, I didn't see you trying to become someone that you're not. I didn't see you comparing yourself to other people. You were just like, okay, what do I have to work with? What has my experience taught me? What has my training prepared me for? What are my gifts? What are my weaknesses? What can I do with all this stuff? And you just went to town, you know, and it was just exciting watching all of that happening, you know, and knowing as I was looking at our girls, you know, and then like looking at you going, we're not okay. Yeah. So on paper, yeah, we've got this debt hanging over our heads. But there has not been one day of our life that we've had to scrape or scrap for something. There's always been more than enough. And it's been through your hard work, through a lot of the blessings, I've been able to do things I've been involved in that has also helped us financially. Also been through the beautiful community of people that we have around us supporting us, you know, because needs are met more than just financially. They're met emotionally. They're met spiritually. They're met socially. They're met mentally. And we've honestly been surrounded by some of the most incredible people in our lives in these 10 years that we've been here in Minnesota that have become family to us without having biological family. We've made our own family. They've made us part of the family. So, yeah. So I would say that's really kind of like my perspective on it all. You know, it's like challenges have come and they've sucked and we've cried. And we've battled and we've argued and we've, you know, but that's a part of life. You don't give up. You don't quit. You push through. You keep going till that victory is at hand, you know, and I believe that that's what we've done and what we're continuing to do, you know, because we're doing it together. We're better together. You know, homes divided against itself cannot stand. We are not divided and we won't be, you know, so we face things that have tried to divide us. We've faced crap. You know, junk, mess, but we're still here because we have chosen not to give up. We choose to fight, even if we have one eye.
Absolutely. Well, and I think one of the biggest challenges for us has been, you know, as I've done these different things, the podcast, the land business, city building kit, and doing those, you know, I think that has led to some tension in some ways in our marriage, you know, as I've been doing the side hustle. So I'd love for you to talk about that tension. Obviously we've worked through some of that, but talk through that for people to let them know, hey, this isn't all rainbows. What's it like from a spousal perspective when it takes time to do all that stuff?
Yeah, well, there's this ebb and flow with how we do things. I believe every husband and wife have to find that for themselves. And at the end of the day, there has to be an ultimate decision made that we will not sacrifice our family because of these things that we may want to achieve. Because we see it around us all the time, people saying, oh, well, I wanted to achieve my goals. And so my family had to be the price that I paid for that, you know, and it's like, no, you know. And so like, as we have been, traversing, navigating through these different territories and these new adventures, we've really had to be sensitive to, okay, where are the scales balanced right now? Are the scales balanced right now more in your favor, where I need to lay some things down and sacrifice right now so that you can really go gung-ho into this? Or are the scales balanced for me right now where you need to lay some things down and sacrifice, you know, because it has been an interesting, I would say, for 5.5 years, you know, as I pursued more music things and ministry things, and then still we had you doing all the things and then, you know, our girls and making sure, again, at the end of the day, that we were not sacrificing them or each other for the things that we are passionate about, you know? And so we've made some changes. We've made some big changes. But I think the thing that's been really cool about it is we've made those changes not really caring what anybody else thought, because we made those changes going off of wisdom and after a lot of prayer and after a lot of deciding and getting wise counsel too from people that we know that care about us. And we're like, this is what we need to do for our family. And if people don't like it, oh, well, you know what I mean? They're not in our marriage. They're not in our home. They're not in our family. They're not there with us daily when our children need us. You know, when our daughter's going through, our youngest one going through just a recent surgery, you know, or going through a health challenge, or the oldest one transitioning to high school and really needing us to nurture her and help her navigate her, you know. And so it's definitely a, at the end of the day, like, do not sacrifice the people that you love, that love you, for what you think you're supposed to be doing. Because if it can't work out, if you can't have both of those, then you really need to reassess if that's what you're supposed to be doing. And I think that's, we continually reassess as we go along. Nothing's set in stone except for our love for one another and our love for our children. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. And I think one of the things about our relationship, you know, I think I can have some workaholic type tendencies, mm-hmm. right? Just being bluntly honest. And I know a lot of physicians can relate to that. Mm-hmm. And as my spouse, you know, you challenge me to every so often try and pull me back, mm-hmm. and whatnot, which leads to some tension, of course. But I think as we look at and talk about, you know, what's the priority, what do we need to do? And even finding out who we are different as people. You know, like for you, you're much more into social media and wanting to get together and being social just in general than I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm content being at home and our family. And, you know, I think that that push and pull and ebb and flow and tug, I think, is the beauty of our relationship. And so for everyone listening out there, you know, I guess don't be afraid to have your spouse challenge you at times.
Right.
And it's been a healthy thing, I think, for us, for each other, you know, to challenge one another on different issues and things. And I think doing the side hustle thing, we were having to keep the end goal in mind.
Yeah.
Of here's where we want to go.
Yeah.
And me making commitment to you that it's not going to be this way forever. That there's a finish line, and mm-hmm. and here's what it looks like. I'm curious to know from you, do you feel like there's certain seasons maybe where things get a little busier or whatever, but in general, do you feel like I'm able to balance things better, you know, let's say now than it was a year or two ago as I've been pursuing these different things? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I would definitely say that within the last year to 16 months, 18 months, I've definitely seen an improvement in the way that you're balancing things too. And I feel like both of us have played a key role in that, because I do feel like one of the things that was probably tough on you from my perspective was me kind of in your ear and being like, oh, why do you got to do this right now? And how come you can't do this? And, you know, and just feeling like I was trying to put these expectations on you that you could not meet. And that's the other thing, too, like spouses, like the second that you put every expectation on your husband or your wife to be everything that you need is a second that you just set them up for failure each time, because they can't be everything that you need. You know, relationships, for me, it's my relationship with God. For you, it might be your relationship with other friends and families or whatever. Maybe you have faith as well too. But don't put that stress and strain on your spouse. It's not healthy to do at all. You need to let them be free and let them be who they are and encourage them to be that. And in turn, hopefully that will happen back with you. So I would say, yeah, within the past year, I feel like, and you can maybe attest that I've let up and just relaxed a little bit, you know, more. Our home is a lot more peaceful. You know, there are those moments sometimes where I kind of, you know, a little bit, but then we draw back in, because that's just my personality. I'm a little bit more intense. But yeah, it's been pretty neat just to kind of see. And the thing is, too, like you said about having people in our home, that's definitely where my heart is at. I love people and I love hosting people and I love being social. And we have found a good medium, if you will, for that. Like, you may not be the one who organizes all of it, but as soon as people come in our home, you are like right there and you're engaged and you're involved, you know, because that's just the great difference between our personalities. I might be the extroverted person who goes out to get the people, but then once the people are there, you're just as involved and you are just as caring and just as kind and just as loving, you know. And I think that's the beauty about the intricacy of who we are as husband and wife. So yeah.
Awesome. So I'd love for you just to look in the future for a moment, you know, as we move forward with our family, financially and otherwise. I'd love to know from your perspective, where would you like to see our family go? And just address that just for a minute or two.
The biggest thing for our family that I envision and that I see in the future is the ability to be even more generous than what we are right now, with our time, with our finances, with the way that we love people. You know, yours and my heart, I think that was one of the biggest things that I noticed about you and learned about you very quickly when we first met, is how generous you are. When we were in college, you know, you used to invite people over like every weekend to like watch whatever basketball game. Of course, for you, it was always the LA Lakers, you know, and then you would go to Costco and you'd buy all the food and you just like, just bring yourself and come and hang out, you know. And that was one of the biggest things that attracted me to you. It was just your, you know, wanting to just love people and just be around people, you know? And so I see God opening those doors for us to be able to do more of that. I really honestly see that happening in the future, because there's no greater joy than to see other people realizing how important they are and how special they are, and being able to encourage them to go after their dreams too, you know, and being able to give more to our church and the ministry that our beautiful church is doing globally, the involvement that our family can have in that. You and I are going on our first mission trip together this year to China. That's exciting. Gabby and I have gone on a mission trip. Now it's just a matter of time before Eva goes on one too. And then we do it all together as a family. So that's really what I see, is that the more that we're able, you and I are able to tackle these dreams that we have, the more we're going to be able to give to people. And that's awesome. And that's, I'm overly excited about that. So yeah.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. Well, as we wrap up this podcast, I just want to make sure to express my appreciation for you in my life. I love you. And I'm so grateful for the things that you do. And I know it's not always, doesn't come across that way at times, but you're holding down the fort, right? A lot of the times you mentioned earlier, you know, you've sacrificed some things to allow me to pursue the side hustles and some of your dreams. So thank you, honey, for sacrificing for our family and for me and for my dreams to get to this point. And I'm hopeful in believing that as we sit here a year from now, you know, that we'll be in a better position to help you be able to focus more on your stuff, as things have taken off for me, you know, on the land business, for example. And I just need to hold steady and grow a little bit in some of the other areas. And if, cross the fingers, you know, all those things align, you know, there'll be challenges, no doubt about it. They're going to come. But I know bottom line that we're going to tackle it together. We'll have issues. Things will come up, but that you and I will do it together. So thank you for being you, and thank you for everything you do for the family. I love you.
Love you too. Yeah. It's been really exciting to be on here. I'm very much so, Dave has probably mentioned it too, I'm very much so into fitness and keeping myself fit. And there's a new program that's coming out, and the motto of this program is amazing, and I love it. So that's my last thought to leave today. And it says, you must commit in order to climb, so then you can conquer. And I love that. That is just so powerful. So just encouraging all of you, like, commit to your dream so that you can climb those mountains and that you can conquer it, and to see all the beauty of the things and people that will be positively affected by you being who you're supposed to be. So, honey, I love you. Thank you so much for having me be part of this today. It's been an honor to share about our family, about our girls, and be vulnerable with people, which is important to let people in your real life. You know, share the joys, share the, you know, not so good joys, the failures, and just be honest about it. So, yeah.
And I want to finish up the podcast with something that I asked Gabby 2 years ago when she was on the podcast. So let's make sure to link that in the show notes for the podcast of my daughter. I would love to know from you, what is something that is weird or quirky or different about me that you think would be fun to share with everyone? Gabby shared about me screaming as a little girl 2 years ago. So what about for you? What's something fun or interesting or weird or quirky about me?
I would say one of the funniest things is actually, like, just observing you watching an LA Lakers game is hilarious, because, like, it's almost as if you were sitting, like, in those courtside seats, because, like, you, like, throw things, you, like, stomp, you, like, smack the couch, or you, like, jump up and cheer. And it's just hilarious. Like, I have more fun watching you than I do watching the game in itself. And so that's hilarious. It's very entertaining. So, yeah.
There you go. We're coming back, everybody. LeBron carrying the team. We have a chance. The Western Conference is wide open. Anyhow, so that wraps up the podcast for today. That is my better half, my lovely, beautiful wife. I hope you enjoyed the episode and getting to know more about me and my family and this wonderful woman who stands behind me. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We're both so grateful for physicians like you. Without you, we certainly wouldn't have our family like it is today. So we thank you. We love you. You know where to find me to reach out if you have any questions. Happy to be there for you in the same way that you guys have been there for us. All the best to you. Feel free to reach out to me. What is my email? I have so many emails addressed nowadays. I think it's dave@drfreedompodcast.com. There it is. dave@drfreedompodcast.com. Reach out. Any questions for the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast? This is Dave Denniston. Remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. All right, my friends, that wraps it up for today. And just want to remind you, make sure to check out everything that I have ever built in the last 4 years for this podcast. You can get it all for less than $100 by going to drfreedompodcast.com/system. Again, that's drfreedompodcast.com/system. Get the latest books, all the manuals, all the audio to get your financial education all in one place. Again, drfreedompodcast.com/system.